Hi, I'm Amy Jacobus, and you're listening to Figuring It Out.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Figuring It Out, the podcast for millennial women starting online businesses, blogs, and podcasts. I'm Melissa Guller, and each week I interview another great woman to learn more about her story, her challenges, and her best actionable tips. Welcome to this week's episode, everyone. This week, I'm so excited to introduce our guest, Amy Jacobus. Amy teaches entrepreneurs and small business owners how to create easy systems to organize their marketing efforts so they can focus more of their energy on the parts of their business they're really passionate about. So Amy, I'm so excited to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Melissa. I'm so happy to be here. I told you a little earlier before we hit record that I've been listening to gobbling up the interviews you're doing. And I just think it's a really nice space for entrepreneurs to hear how other entrepreneurs are thriving and also their challenges and feel not alone. So it's an honor to be one of those on here.
Oh, thank you. Starting off with some flattery this morning. Makes me feel amazing too as a host.
Coffee and flattery in the morning. That's the best way to start the day, right?
No, couldn't agree more. Mostly, I don't know which one I need more. Do I need more coffee? Do I need more flattery? Probably more volume of coffee.
Yes, yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. A little flattery goes a lot longer way than a little bit of coffee, right?
Yes, agreed. Well, I'm thrilled to have you here. And to kick things off, can you tell us a bit more about how you first thought of the idea for your business?
Sure. So I always say that I started a business by accident, which I realize does not sell how intentional I am about my business today, but it's totally true. I studied dance and journalism in college. I was a double major in dance and journalism. And I was really passionate about bringing those two worlds together to somehow combine my passion for words with my passion for movement. And I grew up in the Midwest. I traveled to New York to plant roots here and be in a city where both of those worlds are really thriving, where there are magazines and still publishing houses. And there's also so much dance and so much activity here. And when I first moved here, I got what I thought was my dream job, working in PR for the performing arts. I was working in a small PR company, and I was helping artists secure critics for their shows to review their work. And over and over and over again, we were delivering these horribly negative, soul-crushing reviews to our clients that the critics didn't like the show and then would just completely bash them. And that was our deliverable. Like, we would say, okay, client, we got the critic to your show, and I'm sorry they said mean things, but look, at least you're in the New York Times. And I just thought there has to be a better way. And I wanted to flip the script. I wanted to be able to share all that was wonderful and all that goes into, like, the passion that goes into creating a show and the ideas and storytelling behind that, so that we could attract audiences rather than simply rely on one review after the fact. And I realized, oh, hey, that's marketing. And so I discovered my love of marketing when I discovered my dislike, I guess, of PR in the end. And that's when I realized my obsession with creating a message, and thoughtfully so, could be useful elsewhere. And I simply started diving into any kind of marketing opportunity I could in the arts and outside of the arts.
So what were some of those first opportunities that you took?
So I had done an internship in marketing and PR in the woods at Jacob's Pillow Dance Festival for a summer before I graduated college. And I met a ton of beautiful, wonderful people at Jacob's Pillow. And a lot of them lived in New York full time outside of the summer festival season. So when I was here and not knowing how to even get back on my feet after totally quitting my PR job without a plan, very unlike me, I connected with those people and realized, oh, everyone I know needs a little bit of help getting the word out about what they do. And so I started cobbling together this group of random jobs with freelancers and small business owners. One of my very first clients, and he's still a client today, was a dance photographer and wedding photographer, Christopher Duggan. And he reached out to me to help connect him with potential publishing opportunities of his photographs in the online wedding magazine world, which was a world totally new to me, but I knew how to pitch a story well, and I knew how to sell good content, and he has excellent content. So I started there and then realized, oh, hey, your website is a little wonky. Maybe we could do something with that. And it seems like you're using email for very, you know, wonky reasons. It's not very strategic. And so from there, I started kind of picking pieces of his business with his, you know, blessing, thank goodness. And we started shaping more of the marketing systems in his own business.
I think that's really smart that you were helping artists, because these are people who have spent such a long time honing a craft, but probably safe to say not a lot of them have any marketing experience, right?
Absolutely. Yes. And I can tell you firsthand that as, you know, training in dance in college, we did not learn about how to build a business from our dance work. We did not learn how to sell our choreography to presenters. We knew how to audition, and that was pretty much that. So there was no building a website. And I think that programs are getting a little bit hip to this now, finally, where they're starting to build into their programs like artists need to become entrepreneurs. But I never learned those skills from my dance training. And I know a ton of working artists today who don't either, nor do they want to know them, frankly. Mm-hmm. They want to focus on what they're most passionate about. And I think that's really what I've built my whole business around, like the expansion of working with artists to working with small business owners to working with nonprofit organizations. All of those clients who I work with have the same thing in common. They would rather spend their time on the thing they're most passionate about, on creating the product, on offering the actual service that they provide, than selling that service or product.
That's so smart. I think it's important too that you're pointing out most people spend all this time in whatever major, whether it's arts or something else, learning a skill, something they're passionate about, and they want to find a way, like you said, to spend their time doing that. So it must be a joy for them to have somebody like you come in and take care of all that other stuff that they don't necessarily want to do or learn how to be better at.
Yep. Yeah. And I think right now what I'm finding is that you can't completely ignore the things you don't want to do, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we all have to do the dishes. We all have to take the garbage out. Right. You can't be completely disconnected from your marketing. And particularly today, when people really request and require of you a very personal presence in your marketing, a connection, people are looking for connection, right? So I don't advise that you hand all of your marketing tasks to an intern or to a VA. I advise that you get involved in creating systems that work for you and in your schedule. And so really every client I work with, we're talking about what is your actual capacity? What are your strengths and capabilities? And how can we tailor those into a marketing system that works, that you can have some things running on autopilot, on automation, but also you are excited about doing your marketing because it's stuff that you actually care about, right? You don't have to be everywhere at once or on every platform. We find the things that you're going to be best at executing and help you execute them strategically.
Okay. First of all, you said one of my favorite words, systems. And I'd love to talk a little bit more about that. So when you say you're working with clients to create a marketing system, Can mm-hmm. you give an example? What exactly does that mean?
Sure. So a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of artists, a lot of nonprofits know that they need certain channels or profiles, right? They need a Facebook page. They need a website, but they don't know how to connect those channels and profiles to one another in a way that actually leads to sales or engagement that they're looking for. So what I do is I step back and I take a look at what is the big picture here? What are the goals and objectives that you actually want to work towards? And then how can we break down that big picture into tiny bite-sized action steps and build actual structure around that to get you to that objective? So if we're looking at, I want to sell more of my online class, for example, we need people to get to that sales page of that online class. So if you have a presence on social media, on Instagram, on Facebook, how are you using paid advertising to pull people into that sales page? How are you using just your organic everyday content to pull people into that sales page? And then what is actually on that sales page that compels users to action? And then when someone signs up for something on that sales page, what is the kind of greeting or welcoming or nurturing sequence they receive by email? All of these things are connected, but I think oftentimes we just know we need it. And so we build it and we leave it disconnected from all these other pieces. So what I'm always trying to do is connect the dots between how are we acquiring interested parties to your company or business, and how are we nurturing them along, you know, the marketing funnel, which everyone knows a different version of, and getting them to take action, getting them to actually buy or participate.
I think that concept of the nurture aspect of it between the moment they find out about you for the first time and the moment they decide to buy, I think that's the area that's often overlooked for people who maybe haven't heard of marketing funnels before. And the comparison I like to make is that if you walked into a store and a salesperson handed you a shirt and said, buy this shirt now, like you would freak out.
That's the best example. That's exactly what it's like.
Yeah, that's how a lot of marketers approach it.
And a lot of people do skip it. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. A lot of people skip that step.
Mm-hmm. So what does some of the like nurture experience look like?
I think a lot of people discount this idea of connection, that people want to be heard and they want to feel a strong relationship with someone, even if they don't know them, like a familiarity, something that relates to their life. And I think a good nurture sequence introduces not only the objective, like how you're going to change this person's business or life, whatever service you're offering them, how are you going to give them a great experience, but also who you are and why you're best suited to do that, so that there is this level of, oh yes, I grew up in the Midwest too, or there's something someone can grab onto and remember about you that makes you stand out in their mind as the person they feel most comfortable going down this path with.
Mm-hmm. I think that word familiarity is so important because people want to do business with people they like and they trust.
Exactly. I mean, I think that really like 90% of sales is just they like you. Yeah. And so if you're not allowing them in or allowing them a chance to know who you are and where you come from, it's going to be really a lot harder to convince someone to say yes, even to an opportunity that makes so much sense for them that it's like a total no-brainer. Why wouldn't they say yes to that thing?
Mm-hmm. And I have to add though too, we talk about familiarity, building relationships, but for those people who are maybe hearing, oh, that means I have to share tons of personal info about me on the internet. What are we really talking about? What kinds of things would you be sharing in order to build those relationships?
Sure. So I know that is actually a major fear of some of my clients is that feels too personal. I don't want to share that. And I never force anyone to share a story they're not ready to tell, or they maybe don't ever want to give away to the public space, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that there are certain aspects of even the first question you asked me today about how did I come up with the idea for my business? How did I build this business? That is a story I can tell that can help me relate to other business owners, because we all have that how I built my business story. And everyone's has similarities, and everyone can put themselves back in that place of feeling, yep, that's how it felt when I was building my business. I felt like I was just tumbling around and everything was by accident, and now I'm finally doing it with intention. Or maybe they felt the complete opposite of that, and then they don't relate to you as well, and maybe that's not your ideal fit. And so I think there are pieces of what we provide to others as an artist. If you are creating a new work, for example, you can talk about your process of creating that you feel comfortable with. So maybe it's literally your process. I bring dancers into a studio. We improvise and do contact improvisation, move our bodies together, and then we pick out the pieces that are interesting to us and we elaborate on that. People love to hear about creative process because a lot of people don't think they are creative and they wish they were. And so that's really fascinating for them. Or it could be, I am making a piece about my mom. I'm writing this music because, you know, my mother inspired me and this is how she did so. So it can be from that personal about your process to more technical, and it still can be an interesting story to share to connect.
I love that idea about sharing. It's like a behind the scenes almost of the art. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure anybody could do that too. Even that's a great tip for artists, but anybody working on a business could do the same thing and talk about how you did something and maybe it worked, maybe it didn't, but sharing that journey, any piece of a journey, big or small, could be a great way to relate to people.
Absolutely. And I get a lot of ideas about what to share and what people are actually interested in from watching the engagement on my own social media. So I will share a story that I'm just simply thinking about that morning on Instagram stories, for example. And then I'll get all of these responses about this one thing that felt super insignificant to me. And then I realize, oh, people are relating to this. They need, they're craving connection on this point. How can I give them more? And so I can take the analytics, the data, the insights of what's happening with content I already have out there and what's resonating with people and build on that. And I like to do that even with my blog. You know, I write a twice monthly blog called Bright Ideas on my website, and it's all marketing how-tos and tips. And I'll see what is the most trafficked, what are people getting the most out of, what are they spending the most time on in terms of analytics, like real raw numbers and data. And then I can say, you know what, it looks like people are dying to know more about website user engagement. How can I write, what is another topic in that arena that I can write about so I can give them more value?
Mm-hmm. I love both examples of data that you just gave, because I think it's easy to assume that data is all numbers. And sometimes, like your blog post traffic, looking at numbers, which posts are the most popular, is a really valuable piece of information. But other times, things like Instagram stories, maybe it's just people responding to you or giving you their version of a story if you shared, no matter how many of them respond. You can tell if it's really hitting home with somebody, if they've taken the time to, you know, reply to you.
Absolutely. And you can understand if it's not, if you hear crickets. Mm-hmm. And that's a totally other side of the coin. And I think that that's just as valuable. You know, there are many things that I put out into the world that I just get silence. And then I realize, ooh, yes, no one wants that thing, or no one's interested in this at this moment. And I learn from that as well, right? So I recently was talking about how I'm really excellent at taking big picture ideas and breaking them down into these action size steps, right? These action steps. And I feel very confident saying that because I just know in my bones that that's what I'm excellent at. And I had a couple people commenting, I can't believe you just came on Instagram and said, I'm really good at this. And I said, well, I can't believe you're not. I can't believe you're not coming on Instagram and sharing with the world what you're really excellent at and what missed opportunities are out there because you haven't stated clearly and with gusto, I'm excellent at this thing. And so I challenged everyone in my following to tell me what they're great at, that they need to brag about more. And then I also asked, and what do you think I'm great at? Those of you who know me and have followed me for a while, or maybe know me in person, that I'm not bragging about. And do you know how many answers I had for the question about me and zero responses for the questions about them? Really? And so that's when I was like, okay, we have a problem here. And now we all need to coach each other on how to brag about ourselves. And I think that's really what marketing is. It's like strategic bragging.
I love that. It's true though, because unless you tell people that you have an expertise or you have a really great product or service, how are they supposed to know about it?
Exactly. And I think it's a very scary thing to come out with confidence about what you do. And a lot of my clients and a lot of my projects that I work on, a lot of the people I coach one-on-one about their marketing, about their marketing systems, we have to uncover first, what is it that you offer the world and who is your ideal consumer of that thing? And the what is it that I offer to the world can be a really paralyzing question, a frightening question, because that's the moment that you're deciding to launch something. You know, that's what you have to commit to.
Mm-hmm. And just to give an example, who would you say is your ideal client?
Oh, wow. So I think that this has been one of my biggest challenges in my business is I coach all my clients about how important defining your ideal user and ideal client is. And I think for myself, it's always been the scariest thing to answer. And I think that's because I have deep roots in the performing arts and nonprofit. And I also have a deep desire and a growing interest in heading more in a direction of serving other small business owners, other female identified entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And what I find is that my ideal client is all of those things because they really share the same characteristics and the same traits in their businesses, in their companies. And that is simply that they are either going it alone or with a very small staff. They have limited time. And like I said before, they don't want to be spending all of their time on marketing. They want to be spending their time in the part of the business or company they love, whether that's creating or teaching or, you know, actually building products. Mm-hmm. And they're very conscious about what they invest in and what they spend on for their expenses in their businesses. And so nonprofits, very budget conscious, very small staff, usually overtaxed in some way, working on many things at once. Artists, usually going it alone, trying to build an audience. And entrepreneurs and small business owners share those same kind of constraints and fears.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting that it's not necessarily that you've identified like a demographic or even a career that they all share, but there are like the fears or the psychographics or just similarities on a much deeper level that all of your ideal clients share is really interesting.
Absolutely. And I find that I can't get out of this. Like this is who I serve. I serve the people who are afraid of marketing or who just are adamant that they hate it. Mm-hmm. And I help them transform into people who have beautiful, easy systems in place that support their marketing and sales, and who are actually excited to do the marketing tasks that they do, whether that's writing a blog regularly, because we've found that through writing, that's how they really process their best ideas, or if it's showing up on Instagram and curating a beautiful feed of inspiring content and behind the scenes news of their business, whatever they find are their strengths and their passion in terms of putting content out to the world, we find a way to support that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like a great mission or a great person to serve. Sounds very cohesive to me. If you hadn't told me you were struggling with identifying that person, I would have never known.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I feel like because I often talk about the three typical clients, the nonprofit, the artist, and the entrepreneur, that muddies the message that they all actually are the same. And so I have to do a lot of explaining, I think, to mm-hmm. really get to that core struggle, those core challenges, and say, nope, you're all very similar. We can handle this together.
Yeah. I'm sure that's a challenge that a lot of listeners are facing too, because niching down is such a popular trope these days. And it feels like we all have to decide to serve like only single moms in Brooklyn with a dog. Like you have to get so specific, it seems, to some of these people. But I like what you're recommending too, which is, yeah, it might be a little harder to identify people by their fears, but it really is the same service that you're providing them. And so you can serve a few different people. But I think what's important is that you're not saying you could serve everyone. You still are choosing a group of people, even if it's a couple of smaller groups.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I also think that the vibe you put out there will attract the vibe you want back in return. Mm-hmm. And so just the way that we market our work and the way that we talk about what we do is going to be a total turnoff for some people. And that's great, because I think you should also be actively repelling the people you don't want to work with. And I almost think at this point in my business, that may be more important than seeking the ideal client, is realizing who is not the ideal client and why, and how do we make sure they know that we're not for them.
Mm. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and what that has looked like for you?
Sure. I mean, I think I'm still figuring this out. My business has really changed in the past 8 years from providing very task-oriented services, saying, we will implement your social media for you. We will post on Instagram. We will create your Facebook ads. We will write your blog posts. We will set up your email systems, to being more about teaching and guiding you to create those systems, and then finding and connecting you with the right person to implement if you can't do it on your own. And I think right now, I still occasionally get the inquiry about, can you curate and post on my Instagram feed for me, for example? Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to find the ways to cue the people who need that kind of support, that we are not the right fit for them. And so I actually, if you all visit my website later, you'll see on my contact page, I spend a lot of time on my contact page saying why you shouldn't reach out to me.
Mm, interesting.
And I actually received an email this week from someone who said, I saw that you don't post on social media for people. However, that's what I think I need at this time. Do you know anyone you could refer for that kind of service? And I thought that was a huge triumph that we received this inquiry that was so aware of our actual services and offerings that they knew to say, I know you don't do this, but
yeah,
I thought that was a huge win.
I think that's such a smart idea. And I hope we'll give people your website in a minute. I hope they do check out your contact page for some inspiration on not just, like you said, attracting the right people, but also maybe kindly suggesting that some people might not be the right fit for what you're offering.
Exactly. Yeah. And kindness is key. I'm not saying like, get away, people. Please go elsewhere. My whole business is built on warmth and kindness.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you can better serve the right people if you aren't spending all of your time trying to please everyone.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the biggest lessons that you have as a business owner is how do you build a business where you can serve at your highest and best, and not how do you do everything for everyone?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great lesson, and I'm sure one that can only be really learned over time. Before we go, since we are kind of coming up on our time, I'd love to hear what's next for you. What are some of your big goals coming up?
So my biggest goal coming up is I go through a process with my clients, with my marketing clients, to build these systems, right? To connect marketing from outside your own online home, whether that's social media or however networking events, however you're acquiring interested parties, and connecting them through your actual website, your actual nurture sequence that we just talked about. I do this again and again and again for clients one-on-one, and it is always the same process of determining who your ideal audience is and who is not, of determining how to create the right copy and content to build their interest, building a website to inspire action, using social media as a strategic support system for sales. It's the same marketing coaching I do over and over. And so right now I'm building and shaping a new offering that would be a 6-month group program where female identified business owners can learn this process together and not only learn how to build their marketing system, but also gain a community of support and feedback and kindness from other business owners. So that will launch next year, and that I'm really excited about because I only have so much time in the day to help someone one-on-one. And I know that I can serve a lot more women, a lot more amazing business owners out there by grouping them together and connecting them with one another as well.
I think that's so exciting to hear about your group program because I'm sure one-on-one coaching, obviously there's a huge value there, but there must be so many added benefits too to being around other women who are in the same boat as you.
I agree. And I think, again, it comes down to this idea of connection. We're all looking for it. And in a world that becomes increasingly digital, which is so amazing that we have so many more opportunities to get our work out in front of others and connect with people globally, that's an incredible piece of becoming more digital as a community, as a society. However, it also can feel really isolating, right? And so I've been a part of communities, in-person communities and programs in the past few years, and I have just found them so essential to getting through the day. I want to give that back as well as the marketing tips and how-tos.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of connections, before we go, where can people connect with you or learn more about what you're up to?
Sure. So I'm hanging out on Instagram most often as my social media of choice. So you can find me at Amy Jacobus on there. And I respond personally to all my DMs and check out what you're doing. So definitely connect with me there. And of course, my website is amyjacobus.marketing. And you can grab a ton of free resources like How to Find Your Forever Fans, which is a workbook I created that leads you through the process of defining and understanding your ideal audience. And tons more on there, just like ideas and ideas and ideas for you to steal.
Amazing. And we'll make sure to include links to both of those in our show notes as well, so that people can come back, find you. And I can attest about the DMs. We had a nice little chat about the Harry Potter play in New York when we connected on Instagram. So jealous. It was wonderful. Quick aside, everyone should see it. I loved it.
Oh, I actually heard you're a Ravenclaw on another episode, and so am I.
Oh, yes. Maybe I should. I love that this is really bringing people together. I should start asking all my guests what house they're in.
And then you can just, that can be your way of repelling people who do not connect with this podcast audience, is if you are not in a house, you obviously do not connect with us.
Fair. Although to be true, I think I would welcome all Hogwarts houses, all muggles, and zero Death Eaters. So
yes,
around here. Well, Amy, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show. And thank you again for coming on and sharing all of your knowledge with us.
Yes. Thank you, Melissa. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us this week. You can find links to Amy's website and socials in the show notes at figuringitoutpodcast.com. I also have a quick favor to ask before we go. If you enjoyed this week's episode, and I know I did, I'd love to, if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. These reviews are huge because they help iTunes and new listeners know that people are enjoying our podcast. So I can't thank you enough in advance. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode with Amy Jacobus. I'm Melissa Guller, and you've been listening to Figuring It Out. See you next week.